welcome to Touchstone, your weekly poetry space. The theme today is love. I'm CJ, and it's wonderful having you here at my place. I'll start with some sonnets by William Shakespeare. Most of his delightful 14-line creations are about love, in all its glory and sometimes in its less wondrous incarnations. If you haven't read the sonnets, I suggest you take the plunge sometime. You'll be richly rewarded if you do. There are 154 of them, and as I said, each consists of only 14 lines, divided into three quatrains and ending in a rhyming couplet. Some phrases from the sonnets will seem familiar to you because they have inspired other art forms such as movies and television shows. The Darling Buds of May springs to mind. This was the name of a book written by H.E. Bates, published in 1958, and later made into a British television series of the same name. However, that very phrase first appeared in Shakespeare's Sonnet No. 18, and that, my friends, was first published in 1609. We'll start with this sonnet, No. 18. Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate. Rough winds do shake the darning buds of May, and summer's lease hath all too short a date. Sometime too hot the eye of heaven shines, and often is his gold complexion dimmed. And every fair from fair sometime declines, by chance or nature's changing course untrimmed. But thy eternal summer shall not fade, nor lose possession of that fair thou owest, nor shall death brag thou wanderest in his shade, when in eternal lines to time thou growest. So long as men can breathe or eyes can see, so long lives this, and this gives life to thee. Sonnet No. 91 perhaps has a more passionate call on love. Some glory in their birth, some in their skill, some in their wealth, some in their body's force, some in their garments, though newfangled ill, some in their hawks and hounds, some in their horse. And every humour hath his adjunct pleasure, wherein it finds a joy above the rest. But these particulars are not my measure. All these I better in one general best. Thy love is better than high birth to me, richer than wealth, prouder than garments cost, of more delight than hawks or horses be, and having thee of all men's pride I boast. Wretched in this alone, that thou mayest take all this away, and me most wretched make. Sonnet No. 94 is quite a lot darker. Perhaps the bard's love life was going through a rocky phase when he wrote this one. Sonnet No. 94. They that have power to hurt and will do none, that do not do the thing they most do show, who, moving others, are themselves as stone, unmoved, cold, and to temptation slow. They rightly do inherit heaven's graces, and husband nature's riches from expense. They are the lords and owners of their faces, others but stewards of their excellence. The summer's flower is to the summer sweet, though to itself it only live and die. But if that flower with base infection meet, the basest weed outbraves his dignity. For sweetest things turn sourest by their deeds. Lilies that fester smell far worse than weeds. Sonnet No. 116 has been called the wedding sonnet, so I'm assuming it was written for a couple's nuptials. I chose a quotation from it to be engraved on a wedding present for my niece without knowing this at the time. Either a stroke of luck or, I'm more inclined to believe, a natural fit. 116. Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love is not love which alters when it alteration finds, or bends with the remover to remove. Oh, no, it is an ever-fixed mark that looks on tempests and is never shaken. It is the star to every wandering bark, whose worth's unknown, although his height be taken. Love's not time's fool, though rosy lips and cheeks within his bending sickle's compass come. Love alters not with his brief hours and weeks, but bears it out even to the edge of doom. If this be error, and upon me proved, I never writ, nor no man ever loved. Sonnet number 130 puts me in mind of Germaine Greer's wonderful detective work in her book called Shakespeare's Wife. Not a lot is known about Anne Hathaway, or indeed about the bard himself, but Greer's punctilious research has brought to light some very interesting observations. It's true, Shakespeare addresses his mistress in this poem, but in his time the titles mistress and wife were often interchangeable, weren't they? Sonnet number 130. My mistress's eyes are nothing like the sun. Coral is far more red than her lips red. If snow be white, why, then her breasts are dun. If hairs be wires, black wires grow on her head. I have seen roses damask'd red and white, but no such roses see I in her cheeks. And in some perfumes, is there more delight than in the breath that from my mistress reeks? I love to hear her speak. Yet, well I know that music hath a far more pleasing sound. I grant I never saw a goddess go. My mistress, when she walks, treads on the ground. And yet, by heaven, I think my love as rare as any she belied with false compare. Don't you think that was written for his wife? It was a very long, long relationship, wasn't it? Although he didn't live very long. He was only in his 50s when he died. I believe Anne lived for quite a lot longer than that. Next is a poem written more than 200 years after Shakespeare. I've heard a few objections to it because in these days of, well, hopefully, more enlightened views towards women, some ladies believe it denigrates them. I don't believe it does, but can see where this thought is coming from. In the past, women have been blamed for attracting men through witchcraft, and nobody knows how many innocent women were burned at the stake for spurning a powerful man. Yet I'm afraid this poem casts as much of a spell over me as the fairy child casts over the hapless knight-at-arms. It is, of course, La Belle Dame sans Merci, and it is by John Keats. Oh, what can ail thee, knight-at-arms, alone and palely loitering? The sedge has withered from the lake, and no birds sing. Oh, what can ail thee, knight-at-arms, so haggard and so woe-begone? The squirrel's granary is full, and the harvest's done. I see a lily on thy brow, with anguish moist and fever dew, and on thy cheeks a fading rose fast withereth too. I met a lady in the meads, full beautiful, a fairy's child. Her hair was long, her foot was light, and her eyes were wild. I made a garland for her head, and bracelets too, and fragrant zone. She looked at me as she did love, and made sweet moan. I set her on my pacing steed, and nothing else saw all day long, for sidelong would she bend and sing a fairy's song. She found me roots of relish sweet, and honey wild and manna dew, and sure, in language strange, she said, I love thee true. She took me to her elfin grot, and there she wept and sighed full sore, and there I shut her wild, wild eyes with kisses for, and there she lulled me asleep, and there I dreamed, ah, woe betide, the latest dream I ever dreamed on the cold hillside. I saw pale kings and princes too, pale warriors, death pale were they all. They cried, La belle dame sans merci hath thee in thrall. I saw their starved lips in the gloam, with horrid warning gaped wide, and I awoke and found me here on the cold hill's side. And this is why I sojourn here, alone and palely loitering, though the sedge is withered from the lake and no birds sing. Now a poem about the aftermath of love. Written somewhere between 1866 and 1902, it is The Ruined Maid by Thomas Hardy.
Amelia, my dear, this does everything crown. Who could have supposed I should meet you in town? And whence such fair garments, such prosperity?
Oh, didn't you know I'd been ruined? Said she.
You left us in tatters, without shoes or socks, tired of digging potatoes and spudding up docks. And now you've gay bracelets and bright feathers three.
Yes. That's how we dress when we're ruined, said she.
At home in the barton you said thee and thou and thikun and thiasun and t'other. But now your talking quite fits ye for high company.
Some polish is gained with one's ruin, said she.
Your hands were like paws then, your face blue and bleak, but now I'm bewitched by your delicate cheek. And your little gloves fit as on any lady.
We never do work when we're ruined, said she.
You used to call home life a hag-ridden dream, and you'd sigh and you'd sock, but at present you seem to know not of megrims or melancholy.
True, one's pretty lively when ruined, said she.
I wish I had feathers. A fine sweeping gown, and a delicate face, and could strut about town.
My dear, a raw country girl such as you be cannot quite expect that.
You ain't ruined, said she.
I love the utterly subversive nature of this poem, and wonder at the controversy it must have caused when it was first published. Good on you, Thomas Hardy. Probably one of the most famous love poems ever written is Sonnet No. 43, also known as the Portuguese Sonnet, by Elizabeth Barrett Browning, an English romantic poet of the Victorian era. She was born Elizabeth Barrett Moulton Barrett in 1806 and married another romantic poet, Robert Browning, moving to Italy with him in 1846, where she lived until she died in 1861. Elizabeth Barrett Browning's Sonnet No. 43. How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. I love thee to the depth and breadth and height my soul can reach, when feeling out of sight for the ends of being and ideal grace. I love to the level of every day's most quiet need by sun and candlelight. I love thee freely, as men strive for right. I love thee purely, as they turn from praise. I love thee with a passion put to use in my old griefs, and with my childhood's faith. I love thee with a love I seem to lose with my lost saints. I love thee with the breath, smiles, tears of all my life, and, if God choose, I shall but love thee better after death. Although Robert Browning may now be better known than his wife, during her lifetime she was the more popular and celebrated poet. Another remarkable female poet is Emily Dickinson, who was born in Amherst, Massachusetts, in the United States in 1830. Although she came from a prominent family, her poetry was not widely known until well after her death. I'm going to read you Wild Nights, which was published in 1861 and is amazingly modern in its style and considerations. A poet whose work I'm reading today has a similar reference to physical love, but Emily Dickinson's poem predated his by almost 100 years. Wild nights, were I with thee, wild nights should be our luxury. Futile the winds to a heart in port, done with the compass, done with the chart. Rowing in Eden, ah, the sea, might I but moor tonight in thee. Since that was a very short poem, I'll read you another from Dickinson's love canon. Like many others of her works, she didn't give this one a title. I got so I could take his name without tremendous gain, that stop sensation on my soul and thunder in the room. I got so I could walk across that angle in the floor where he turned so and I turned how and all our sinew tore. I got so I could stir the box in which his letters grew without that forcing in my breath as staples driven through. Could divinely recollect a grace, I think they call it God, renowned to ease extremity when formula had failed. My last offering for today is an excerpt from a wonderful radio play written in 1954 by Dylan Thomas. Under Milkwood was originally commissioned by the BBC, and I once had the original performance as a radio play on several long-playing records. No idea what happened to them. I don't seem to have them anymore. Apparently, Dylan Thomas was still writing the play at this first performance, handing pages he'd just written to the actors, who, without any kind of rehearsal, went live to air. No pressure. This play for voices only was later made into a stage play and then into films in 1972 and 2014, which I have to admit I haven't seen. I wonder, though, how Under Milkwood has translated into film. It is such a glorious, sustained poem, no doubt composed to utterly beguile our ears. If you get a chance to read some of it yourself sometime, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. The radio play invites its listeners to enter the dreams and thoughts of the inhabitants of Larrigub, a small Welsh fishing village, which is bugger all, spelled backwards. This excerpt is the dreamed exchange between the blind sailor, Captain Cat, and his lady love of the night, Rosie Probert.
"What seas did you see, Tom Cat, Tom Cat? In your sailoring days long, long ago? What sea beasts were in the wavery green when you were my master?"
"I'll tell you the truth. Seas barking like seals, blue seas and green, seas covered with eels and mermen and whales."
"What seas did you sail, old whaler, when on the blubbery waves between Frisco and Wales? You were my bosun."
"As true as I'm here, dear you tomcat's tart, you landlubber Rosie, you cozy love, my easy as easy, my true sweetheart. Seas green as a bean, seas gliding with swans in the seal-barking moon."
"What seas were rocking, my little deckhand, my favourite husband, in your sea-boots and hunger? My duck, my whaler, my honey, my daddy, my pretty sugar sailor, with my name on your belly when you were a boy, long, long ago."
"I'll tell you no lies. The only sea I saw was the seesaw sea with you riding on it. Lie down, lie easy. Let me shipwreck
in your thighs. So that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed my selection of poems, but I'm always happy to receive suggestions about any others I might read to you. You can leave a message for me on my website, which is www.shezcj.au, all lowercase. Until another episode of Touchstone next week, this is me, CJ, signing off. Goodbye.